This is the story of Paul Revere's ride. Contrary to the legend, it is not just a tale of hoofbeats pounding through the night. It is a story of men and women who face the issues of an April evening squarely and with resolution. You know the poem and the legend. Today we shall meet the people. This is Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. Stories out of that great fabric of visions, struggles, and accomplishments of the American past. Stories of our inheritance. We return now in time to a memorable moment in our history, a moment which shall be the beginning of today's story from Our Inheritance. Our destination, the town of Boston. The time, Saturday afternoon, April 15th, 1775. The place, the home and silversmith shop of Paul Revere in North Square.
What's the matter? What's so interesting outside that window?
No, nothing. Why?
You can't fool me, Paul. I've been married to you too long.
All right. I am restless.
And it's more than Mrs. Wilson Silver.
Partly, and not exactly.
She didn't like it, did she?
No, she didn't. She wanted grapes and designs all over it, lumps of nothing plastering up the clean lines. She wants a sterling silver pitcher to look as though it has smallpox.
Oh, Paul, what am I going to do with you?
Rachel, by the Lord that gave me life, I made that silver plain and simple. Like homespun or a clear Massachusetts sky. The line of the spoons was like the shot of a musket ball with just so slight a curve. Confound it, why must she have silver that is like English silver? But she can have silver that is like, well, like this land.
Hmm?
Bare and clean and honest. New England silver.
You sound almost as if you were talking about a country.
Well?
Maybe you are.
Rachel. No, quick. Quick, my coat.
Why such a start? Where are you going?
Over to Dr. Warren's. Quick.
Dr. Warren. Dr. Joseph Warren. He is a far-sighted man, this Joseph Warren. He is learning how to take his printing press apart. He is one of the leading spirits of this thing that is happening in Boston. He's only 34, fair, light blue eyes, restless. He is a good companion, a firm friend. He is made of the same timber as the great men of the colonies. But he will not live very long. He has a date with destiny on Bunker Hill. But that is in the future. Right now, there is Paul Revere.
I got over as soon as I could. North Square is suddenly full of British Marines. Spotted them from the window.
Gage landing his troops. Well, we were expecting this. Couldn't go on forever. Now, what's he going to do with them?
Oh, maybe pick up Hancock and Adams in Lexington.
He might at that.
Something else has occurred to me.
What?
If you were Gage, once you went to the trouble of going all the way to Lexington to get the ringleaders, would you stop there?
What do you mean?
Wouldn't you go after the powder next to keep down a possible uprising?
Concord?
Exactly.
Well, of course, that's it. The powder store's in Concord, only 6 miles from Lexington. Take Hancock and Adams, take the powder, and it's all over. One night's work.
You're thinking treason.
So are you.
The Commonwealth of Massachusetts against the whole British Empire.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Hancock and Adams are in touch with the rest of the colonies. Now, look. Tomorrow morning, early, ride over to Lexington. Tell them that we think they're in danger. Get instructions from them.
All right. What are you doing there?
Oh, seeing if I can make my little printing press fit into a flour barrel.
Thinking of traveling?
Maybe. A new country's got to have currency. Just an idea I'm toying with.
Come, let midnight now fall upon Boston. Let Saturday night, April 15th, be over. Let Revere go home and sleep, uneasy on his pillow. Let Rachel lie beside him, watching him, wondering. And let the sun rise on Sunday, April 16th. And with it, let's be off to Lexington, to the Clark Parsonage, on this April springtime morning.
John Hancock, why are you polishing your sword?
Because I might want to use it.
Oh, poof! You're too fat. I can just see you fighting out in front here on Lexington Green. You'd be out of breath in no time.
That's hardly complimentary, Mrs. Clark.
I speak the truth, Sam Adams. Reverend Clark! Reverend Clark!
Here I am, Lydia, in the kitchen.
Don't you preach that gluttony is one of the seven deadly sins?
Oh, should I trade it in for some of the others?
Oh, poof. Why, you really weren't eating in there.
No, I was just trying to get the catch on this old flintlock to work again.
What is the matter with you men? John with his sword, you with your flintlock. Do you think you're an Indian fighter again?
I don't know about the Indians, but you may be right about the other half.
You are a minister of God, Jonas Clark.
True. And as such, I want to do everything I can to prolong my stay here so I can do his work.
I'll go.
Reverend Clark.
Wait. It's all right.
Revere, what news from Boston?
Plenty.
Gage?
Yes.
How many troops has he landed?
By this morning, over 1,000.
What do you think, Sam?
I think it's time. If it's going to be now, let it be now.
A night's march, pick us up, go to Concord, get the powder stores, and it's over.
Revere, if they march, we have to know about it. When they're coming, where they're going, how many. You go back to Boston. Keep your eyes open. And if anything starts, get word to us, or we're lost.
Now rumor is afoot. Adams and Hancock have been warned. And even while Revere is making his way back towards Boston, farmers throughout the surrounding country, Concord, Medford, Arlington, are taking down their muskets and checking them. But they would have to know when. You can't lie in a field for 2 days just waiting. Revere returned towards Boston across the Charlestown Neck. On his way toward the city, he saw that the spire of the Old North Church could be clearly seen from Charlestown. When the moment came, if it came, would he be able to give warning? Perhaps not. Perhaps the roads would be blocked. Better have another means at hand. And so in Charlestown, he looked up Bill Conant.
You can see the North Church steeple from here. As soon as we get word in Boston that they're on the move, I'll have signal lights hung in the spire. Then I'll try to ride out and give exact details. Now, if I can't get here, the lanterns will have to do.
Think there'll be any shooting?
I don't know.
Revere rode back into Boston. The British troops were now everywhere. Rachel was waiting up for him.
Oh, thank God you're back.
Oh, Rachel. Did anything happen while I was gone?
No. Sarah Wilson was in again about the silver. She wants to know if you could possibly put some grapes on it.
Oh, Rachel.
Well, just a few grapes.
Now it is Monday, April 16th. General Gage is in his headquarters in Province House, setting up his plans. On Boston Commons, British soldiers drill to the sound of drums, handsome in their red coats in the brisk April air. Boston citizens gather in little clusters. There is no violence, but now and then some unkind words.
Hey, boys! What's the price of lobsters today?
Thank you. Monday, the quiet day, the day before the storm. Something is up and everyone knows it now. But Gage's destination is still a secret. And until it is positively known, nothing can be done.
What time is it, Paul?
Almost midnight.
Come to bed.
Yes, I will in a little while.
What's the matter with you? Why are you putting on your coat?
I have to pay a visit to Bob Newman.
Who's he?
The young sexton of the Old North Church.
The moon rises over Boston. It rises over Lexington. John Hancock and Sam Adams watch it rise.
I think it'll be tomorrow.
Then let tomorrow come quickly.
Suppose we're alone.
The other colonies will help us.
How do you know?
I don't.
They'll hang us if they catch us.
I know.
Get some sleep. No use sitting up.
You go ahead. I want to watch the moon a while.
Let a doctor in Concord by the name of Samuel Prescott also watch the moon. And let him, as men sometimes will when they are alone, speak into the night.
A man ain't got no business living alone. Think I'll go into Lexington tomorrow night and speak a piece with Dolly Milliken.
Let the moon shine, and let the pines tower against the New England sky, and then let the sky grow gray, and then pink. It is Tuesday, April 17th. Now the morning grows on. Now the regulars assemble in increasing numbers on Boston Commons. Watch a current of excitement and uncertainty ripple through the streets of old Boston. Let it grow, and let men wonder.
Could this be it?
Let the afternoon find Joseph Warren finally succeed in disassembling his press and putting it into a flour barrel, except for a part or two.
There. I guess that does it.
And let Paul Revere, citizen of Boston, sit by his window, waiting, breathing a bit heavier, perhaps, watching the parade of uniforms in North Square by the early evening light.
What did you go over to see Bob Newman about last night?
Just an arrangement I had to make with him.
Arrangement? What about?
Some lanterns.
Lanterns? I just don't understand you men.
It grows later. Boston grows more tense. And then there is a certain moment.
Yes?
Just come from Dr. Warren. He says for you to hurry to him, quick.
Hurried over. The streets were full of British officers.
The troops were at the bottom of the commons, about to embark. Probably rendezvous with other troops in Cambridge, and then they march.
Where, Warren?
Lexington, Concord.
How do you know?
One of our boys works as a groom in the Province House stable. Heard Gage's officers talking.
I'll be off. I don't suppose I'll be back in Boston for a while.
No, I don't suppose you will.
Now, how about you?
I'll be all right.
You'll be your marked man.
Oh, I'll stay a little longer just to see what I can find out.
Good luck.
Good luck to you, Paul. On your way.
Footsteps over the cobbles towards Bob Newman's house. British officers everywhere. And then at last, the little house just opposite the old North Church.
Bob.
And away outside the house. British officers inside. I told my mother I was going to bed and climbed out the back window and waited for you.
Oh, good boy. Now, you know what you have to do.
Yes.
Do you have the lanterns?
Yes.
Now, if they come by sea, show two of them, but only for a second or so. I want the Somerset to see them.
I will.
Bob, Are you all right?
Sure.
Well, good luck.
The lanterns are taken care of. Now back to the house on North Square. He might have a time of it with Rachel. He didn't know.
Paul? No. You don't have to tell me.
Rachel, we may not see each other for some time. You'll be all right here. I don't think they'll bother you. If you need anything, get in touch with Joseph Warren, but don't go yourself. They'll be watching him.
Why can't you men leave well enough alone? It's not been so bad for us in Boston.
You know why, Rachel. Remember what I said about the silver?
Yes.
I'll try and send word into you. Don't worry. Goodbye.
Be careful, please.
I shall.
God save you, Paul. God save you.
Now again through the streets of Boston, trying to keep the boots quiet on the rough cobbles. No time to be caught. Bentley, would he be waiting for him? Was the boat ready to ferry him across the Charles? This was a mad night. Maybe it was because of the full moon.
Revere? Who's there?
Joshua Bentley.
The boat?
Yes, come on.
How long will the road take us, Joshua?
About 30 minutes.
How near the Somerset?
Too near. Almost at the Charles Town side.
Easy when you're grounded. Thanks. And good luck.
Good luck to you.
Yeah? Conant.
We saw the lights. Your horse is just down the road a bit.
Oh, good.
She's a bit nervous. She'll be fine if we pace her.
Oh, easy. Easy, girl.
It's Larkin's best horse.
Thank him, will you?
Ah, you don't want no thanks. Up you go.
It's a big night.
A very big night. Good luck.
Good luck to you.
Now let the scene shift. Out Lexington way. A low light in the Clark Parsonage is on. John Hancock and Sam Adams sit by the window. They're waiting, although they're not sure what they are waiting for. But there is something in this night which will not let them sleep. The Reverend Clark is waiting, too. The hammer on his musket works easily now, almost as well as it did in the Indian days. And once again, the stock of the musket is familiar to his hands. Mrs. Clark is in the kitchen. She knows it will be a long vigil. Across the way, watching the light in the Clark Parsonage, sit two people on the porch. Dolly Milliken and a doctor named Samuel Prescott.
What time is it?
Past 2 in the morning, I guess. I'd better go.
Oh, not yet. Look at the moon.
Makes the trees look like silver, like.
Yes. How does it feel to be a doctor?
Good. Where I live in Concord, people treat you good. But it's lonely sometimes.
I guess.
You lonely?
Some. Listen to that.
Yeah, someone in a hurry. Looks like he's heading to the Clark Parsonage. Lights going on in the upper window.
Cameron! Major Pitcairn, coming this way!
He was talking about that British major from Boston.
What do you think is wrong with him?
I don't know.
Maybe he's sick in Cambridge and they sent for Parson Clark. Maybe they need a doctor.
Oh, I don't think so. Maybe it's something special for Mr. Adams or Mr. Hancock.
Adams and that? By Jove! Are they staying with the Parson?
Yes, they had to get out of Boston because of something Mr. Adams said about the British.
I'm going over.
Oh, Sam, no. There are doctors in Cambridge.
There are doctors in Cambridge, but there's a British major there, too, which isn't far from here. And there are powder stores in my town of Concord. And between the two are John Hancock and Sam Adams. Maybe it isn't a doctor they need at all.
Sam! Sam, you coming back?
I'll be back. Wait for me, Dolly. It may not be tomorrow, but you wait.
Who's there?
Samuel Prescott, from Concord.
Have they marched yet? What's the word?
I don't know anything about marching, but I saw the lights and then the rider. Thought I'd see what's going on.
We're brewing some liberty, and the kettle's about to boil over. You can have some if you can shoot a musket straight.
Well, I can bind a wound neat.
You may have to. Go on, Paul.
Conant saw the signal. The road to Cambridge was blocked. I crossed the bridge and came through Medford, trying to rouse as many of the farmers as I could.
Good.
Well, I'd better be off to Concord.
That's where I live. I'll ride there with you if you like.
I warn you, the roads may be blocked.
Doesn't worry me. I know those roads.
Good.
Be careful. When you warn the town, have them ring their bells, so we'll know.
Right.
What time is it, Sam?
Almost dawn.
You boys better get going.
Captain Parker at the tavern, he's got about 70 farmers there now. Not enough. What's the matter?
No bells from Concord. That's what's the matter.
Wait. Who is it?
Revere.
Good God, look at you, man. What's happened?
They jumped us. I was heading out with Prescott when Billy Dawes came up. Warren had sent him from Boston. The three of us got about, halfway to Concord when some British officers in the bushes waylaid us. Oh, walked all the way back.
Dawes?
They took his horse. They took mine. Prescott jumped a stone fence and headed cross-country. They couldn't follow him.
Do you think he got through?
I don't know. But I saw his eyes as he galloped past me.
We'd better be off. They'll be here soon now.
Anything I can do?
We'll send word from Philadelphia. There's a trunk at Buckman's Tavern. All the colonial correspondence is in it. See if you and the Reverend can get it into the woods, where it won't fall into British hands.
It's heavy, this trunk.
Just a little further. Over there in the bushes.
Good. Listen.
It's the British. They're heading for Lexington Green.
Look at them, will you? Moving like one man.
There's Parker's men. 70 of them. Lined up on the green. Don't look like much in the light of morning.
Not those 70, but there are more.
Look, a Britisher is talking with Parker. Parker's shaking his head no.
I wonder what it means. Say, the British are getting in some kind of formation.
Parker's standing firm. Reverend, listen.
Bells from Concord.
Prescott got through.
Oh, countryside will be up in arms. The British might get to Concord, but I don't think they'll be getting back.
We're going to stop them.
Indian fighting, boy. Indian fighting. That's Lexington. Behind every stone wall, behind every tree.
Listen. Listen, the whole colony is ringing.
Bet they're ringing clear up to New Hampshire now, too.
Oh, it's got a nice sound, doesn't it, Reverend?
It sure does. It sure does.
It sort of sounds like somebody's having a birthday. Maybe even a country.
Yeah? Even a country.
You've been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion. And now it's our privilege to hear from the past National Commander of the Legion from Washington, Mr. Lin Yu Stambaugh.
Last Thursday, the 4 million members of the American Legion and its auxiliary joined their fellow Americans in giving thanks for our inheritance. We did so humbly and gratefully, recognizing that the rich spiritual and material blessings which we enjoy individually and as a nation are a gift from a generous God. America has grown and prospered under God because it has not hesitated to give freely of the productivity of its plains, the wealth of its mountains, the power of its waters, and the talents of its people for the benefit of all mankind. What we have shared, God has given us to share. The American Legion believes that to the degree that human ingenuity, resourcefulness, and incentive have combined with our God-given resources to give America the world's greatest industrial and agricultural economy, to that degree has our free enterprise system enabled us to feed and clothe and shelter our own citizens while still helping millions of his homeless and hungry creatures in other parts of the world, both in war and peace. The American Legion recognizes that the responsibility for sharing our blessings with the less fortunate is part of our inheritance, but so also is the instrument for measuring up to this responsibility, a strong and healthy system of free enterprise. Our inheritance, as was dramatically demonstrated today, was made possible by American individualism and independence. These qualities are just as essential to the preservation of our nation and all that it represents. They remain the safeguard of our religious and political freedoms, and they continue to inspire us as God-fearing, intelligent citizens, conscious of the rights and property of our fellow man, to provide for ourselves and our families a standard of living only by our own ambition and our own ability. These are ideals in which the American Legion believes. They are ideals for which we fight, because they are our inheritance.
Thank you, Mr. Stambaugh. Next week, Inheritance will again take you on a journey through the pages of American history. Today's story was written by Robert S. Green. Special music was composed and conducted by Roy Shield. Heard in today's cast were Norman Rose, Patricia Wheel, Bert Collin, Leona Powers, Virginia Payne, Robert Carroll, Joseph Curtin, John Raby, Kermit Murdoch, William Redfield, William Lipton, and Edwin Jerome. Inheritance was produced by Wade Arnold and directed by Ed King. This is Bill Hanrahan speaking.
Enjoy variety entertainment on the Dennis Day Show on most NBC stations.